different question, and that's the accessibility of those records to certain governmental agents and officers at the state level. Is that my misinterpreting Senate Bill 14?
We would like to have, we do want to have this available for the general public. However, when the county service officer for Veterans Affairs is in my courthouse, with one floor up from me, if he requests a certified copy for a veteran that he is trying to help obtain benefits, get through the system, he cannot get that copy from me at the current time, even though he is in the building with me.
That's...
So I think it would be addressing both problems.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, let me get a better understanding then about how, and I think that's something I didn't understand. If, because my point would be that the veteran service officer in your area should be able to get that from you, but also if that person happened to be in Salem doing some work on something at the department, should also be able to get it here. I mean, is there anything that would prohibit that individual from getting it in both? Is there some way we can have it in both places, or do you only get? What you're saying is certified copy should only come out of one source.
No, what I am saying is that currently certified copies can come from the counties for 10 days. After that time, all certified copies
back
from
up.
The state
can come from
now,
them.
Birth or death. There's
birth and
or death.
Death.
They hold it for 10 or 15.
We hold them for 10 days.
Thank you. Yeah.
What this amendment would do, it would allow, to use your example, the county service officer, if he was in Jefferson County, he could obtain it directly from Jefferson County. If he was in Salem, the State Health Division would still have the original copy, and he could also obtain it from the state.
So is there any real conflict? Your amendment it replaces basically the whole language of Senate Bill 14.
No, we're not.
It's in addition.
No.
Okay. That's not clear, I guess, in the way that this was presented.
Well, maybe.
I mean, that's where I apologize.
Okay. We have a universe which is the births and death records. Within that universe are the veterans.
Just about everything.
Okay. Within that universe are the veterans. We want to be able to have those records available for veterans, the death records, if they need them. But at the same time, the information still needs to go to the state for all the reports and all the statistics that are generated. This would allow both of that to happen.
Okay, then one last question, if I can, because yours says no person except,
that's correct,
can provide certified copies.
That's right.
The bill says certified copies can be provided by the state registrar. Are we in conflict there, or am I beating a dead horse?
May I address this, Representative Burton? What this is doing is amending Section 432-120, already in statute, which says no person shall prepare or issue any certificate that purports to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What we are trying to do through this amendment is to say no person other than county or local registrars, as delegated by the state, may do this. We are adding to this bill. We are not changing it.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Further question? Thank you very much. We have Mr. Kyle from the Health Division.
Kyle, I'm Assistant Administrator of the Oregon Health Division. Hopefully I can also address some of the questions that were raised. The Health Division supports Senate Bill 14 in the form that appears before your committee and favors its passage. Let me, if I may, historically provide for you the reason for this particular piece of the legislation, and then I will address the amendment separately. Historically, the Health Division has provided vital statistics records, basically death certificates, for Oregon veterans all the way up through 1983. In 1983, the Legislative Assembly adopted the model vital statistics law, which, when that went through the Assembly, eliminated that particular statute that instructed the Health Division to provide death certificates to veteran families to claim veterans' benefits in an insurance program. When the division learned the hardship this was causing, because we were not, because the legislative body was not aware that this was going out of the statute, it was an oversight, we began then giving free copies to the veterans' families, and at the present day are giving free copies without any particular legislative requirement. The bill was introduced to put into statute, which we concurred with, the requirement that the division gives free death certificates to veterans' families. When the bill went through the Senate, the Veterans Department and the Health Division, all groups testified to this bill. We support the basic legislation in House Bill, or in Senate Bill 14. 5 minutes ago, I received a copy of, when the committee received a copy of the proposed amendment. The Health Division has not seen that amendment before. I can speak to the general concept of that. Several issues come up in that instance. It is, as Representative Burton expressed, an entire different statute. It was not the intent of Senate Bill 14 to address that issue. I would only plead one thing. Since this amendment has not been distributed to parties that would be affected by the amendment, such as the Health Division, the State Registrar is not with me today because he is out of town. We had no inclination that this was going to be an amendment brought before this committee, who could speak much more intelligently on the model vital statistics law that he is forced to administer and how that might affect the Health Division. I would only plead with the committee that at this point, the last minute attempt to change this bill would force us in a position to oppose the amendment, because I cannot tell you at this point the ramifications under the model vital statistics law that he is enforcing as the sole responsible agent of the state to collect the information from the counties and be a central depository for that information.
Mr. Kyle, the bill is listed only on the hearing today, and we don't take action on the first day. We probably would have this up on work session either, well, next Friday at the latest. Could we get a response by then? Is that possible?
Yes, we certainly could.
Okay. And well, I don't want to. I think I. It seems to me that there ought to be the ability of citizens out there to go right to the county courthouse or the local health department to get the record. But perhaps I'm missing something in terms of arguments for that, and certainly the committee would like to hear those arguments and understand that you have to check in.
I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. I believe there will be many people, if we are have another hearing on it, on the amendment, many people, I'm sure people from the funeral industry and so on, many other citizens will want to comment on the amendment, and those people will certainly appear before the committee.
Representative Burton?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yeah, it would seem to me like the amendment that's been offered here is in a sense a friendly amendment almost, but it does relate to a different statute. I would, and I'm glad we'll have an opportunity to discuss it later on, but to the bill itself, as it came out of the Senate, did that not have a fiscal impact? Apparently it didn't. There was no subsequent referral of Ways and Means. I'm wondering what the, if there's a fee right now being charged, is the fiscal impact so insignificant that it didn't go to subsequent to Ways and Means?
Yes, Representative Burton. We did no fiscal impact, as I mentioned before, because we're presently giving away the copies of the death certificate to all veterans' families now from the Health Division.
You're internally waiving that fee anyway.
Yes.
Further questions?
Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Could we direct staff to have that amendment done in LC form so that we can look at it better?
Yes, I think that's a good idea. Thank you, Representative Bellamy.
Thank you.
Are there any other witnesses on Senate Bill 14 who didn't have the opportunity to sign up and would like to comment? Okay, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 14, and why don't we try to, as of today, we'll have a further hearing and work session, though, next Friday, both a hearing and work session on Senate Bill 14 next Friday. House Bill 2285, I think there's one set of amendments. House Bill 2285. We have Mr. Murphy, Mr. Snyder, Mr. Neal. Well, we have one set of amendments, and then we have the military department's amendments as well. Oh, okay. Why don't we let Representative Bunn explain the First Amendment?
Mr. Chairman, we started out moving from the original bill with amendments by Representative Phillips to reduce the limits to $200,000 on a single occurrence and $500,000 in the aggregate. There was a sharp difference of opinion between the trial lawyers and their constituency, and on the other side, the cities and counties and general services. I don't speak for those, but that's my perception. There were attempts to compromise. I then introduced amendments to set up a category above $100,000 defined as catastrophic damage. A step further occurred, and there has been a compromise between at least part of those various groups to end with amendments that would provide that for an individual, talking about personal injury, you could have $100,000 of general and spatial damages, and then you could go beyond that point with up to an additional $100,000 of spatial damages, which is basically medical. The problem with my original amendments is that in order to get into that second category under the individual coverage, you would have to have at least $100,000 of special damages, and some people might not get to that level, so they couldn't get their medicals beyond $100,000. So to recap that, this gives $100,000 in effect in general damages and up to $100,000 additional special damages for the individual. It removes the discussion of attorney's fees. There were a number of cities that were concerned about the discussion of attorney's fees. There's a letter from the city of Salem in our packet. That has been removed. And it's my understanding, and the various parties could correct on this, with the amendments, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association now supports the bill as amended. The League of Oregon Cities supports the bill as amended. The counties do not oppose the bill. That's a distinction as opposed to supporting. And I'm not sure of General Services' position on the bill.
Are they here today?
Yes. Gene Snyder is here and could perhaps comment on their position if he cared to.
Mr. Chair, which one are you proposing?
Proposing the amendments that were handed out by Rocky, and their result would be a bill for an act. Then they are incorporated in that.
And that's 100 and 100 and 500?
That's correct. And I also spoke with Representative Phillips, who has been significantly interested in this issue, and he concurs in these latest amendments also. It's my feeling that one other change from the original bill. The original bill would have, in some senses, had a retroactive effect. This amendment makes it clear that the bill's effective date is for occurrences after the date of the bill. And that takes care of a lot of technical problems. I would recommend adoption of the amendments as an effective compromise between many of the parties, but I would be interested in hearing from witnesses.
Before I hear from Mr. Nestle and Mr. Snyder, could I just, for illustrative purposes, suppose you got 75 generals and 50,000 specials. That adds up to 125,000.
You would then recover 125,000.
Okay. Yep. So once you hit that threshold of any combination of generals and specials of 100,000, anything above that, if it's generals, damages, you get them. Is that correct?
No. You start first. That you have $100,000 that can be allocated in any combination. But once you get above the $100,000, it can only be allocated to special damages, medicals, lost wages, that sort of thing. So that if you had, in theory, and the jury really doesn't break it out this way, but you had, in theory, $100,000 of general damages and $75,000 of specials, you could get $175,000.
Okay.
Before the amendments I had them before, if you had 100,000 general and 70,000 special, you couldn't get that 70,000 because you had to go clear to 100,000 in specials before you triggered the catastrophic. So this gives the plaintiff a greater opportunity to recover for the medical and lost wage needs than we had under my earlier proposed amendments.
Thank you. I certainly want to compliment you on your role in this. Mr. Snyder, Mr. Nestle.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my original testimony on House Bill 2285, I indicated that the issue of whether the limits should be raised was really a policy issue for the legislature to address. We have been working with the League of Cities and Counties on the proposed amendments. We're aware of those amendments. We've also been advised about the governor's office position on the bill. And at this time, I have not had a chance to get a reading from my immediate superior, Dean Houston, as to what the department's position will be. I imagine it will be very close to what the governor's office position is.
Okay. Mr. Nestle.
Yes, with respect to the Department of Justice, I unfortunately have not been given direction at this point in the absence of my supervisors. If you will recall the March 12th hearings with respect to this bill, I think you remember that the Deputy Attorney General set this forth as primarily a policy-oriented bill that does have a fiscal impact, but was rather strong with respect to our opposition to the retrospective effect of the bill. That has now been eliminated, and therefore it does take care of a significant concern. I can't give you a direct representation, but I think that those things are appropriately noted.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I add one more thing?
Sure.
We've completed an estimate of the increased limits on the fiscal impact, and we now believe it'll be in the area of about 21%, or roughly about $2 million for the state.
Okay.
to go to 200, 500.
Representative Bunn.
Gene, is that true even with this modification of the 200, 500, that the second half of the 200 can be only for spatial damages?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, that's correct.
Further questions? You do realize this is a subcommittee and there will be a full committee hearing on this if this amendment is successful. Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, one other comment I would make. I note that there is a letter from the National Guard concerning a desire for an exemption. That issue was not discussed with the various people involved in the negotiations on the bill. It would be my thought, if appropriate, that it might be better to deal with that issue in full committee.
You're with the...
What's the justification of the National Guard asking for it?
I think there's a letter attached to our information that's distributed today.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Alan T. Murphy, Jr. I go by the name of Tom Murphy. I haven't testified in front of this committee before, but I happen to know Dick Springer quite well. I'm a member of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and I echo what the Representative Bunn said, that we reluctantly but pragmatically accept the amendment. As far as the OTLA is concerned, I, on my own behalf, even more reluctantly but more pragmatically, accept the amendment because I just settled a case against the medical school where my 4-year-old child will always be a burden upon society, and I settled it for $100,000, and it was worth at least $500,000. That was last week. That's my reluctance. Thank you.
Thank you. We don't have anybody here from the National Guard. Mr. Neal, are you from the... Oh.
Just recognize the uniform. Good afternoon, Mr. Lockwood. I think the members do have the letter here.
Chairperson and members of the committee, I apologize for not having separate written testimony. However, I hope the letter will serve as that purpose.
Sure.
I won't go into great detail on this except to say that it came as some surprise to us to find out that there was this hiatus in the Federal Tort Claims Act coverage since late December of 1981. The Federal Tort Claims Act has applied to National Guard activities, and this would be all Title 32 activities of the National Guard, and that's most anything that's done other than state active duty. Any time we're in a paid federal status, even though we're under the auspices of the governor, we're covered by the Federal Tort Claims Act, and of course it has to be the usual provisions of in-scope application. This reduced substantially the liability requirements of each state, and particularly the state of Oregon, because we then quit making claims through the risk management and began making all of our claims through the federal claims process. As I say, we found out, based on the Washington case and the Pennsylvania case, that if a National Guard member creates a liability situation, whether it's it'd have to be basically in the negligence situation, the claimant may have an opportunity for a double recovery position. That's the case in Washington. If I could just run you through it, it was a artillery accident that involved a round falling in a place that it was not designated to fall. It happened to be an active duty patrol that was in that area, with two persons killed and two seriously injured. If the artillery had been fired by Army Reserve or by active Army, there would be no lawsuit. That was the basis of the Frary's Doctrine under the Federal Tort Claims Act position at the federal side. But because it was the National Guard, then there is a cause of action against the state of Washington. And it's that situation that we want to attempt to preclude happening in Oregon. We are working also for an extension of the Federal Tort Claims Act, so that would be an exclusive remedy at the federal side. And it's taking quite a long time. It's endorsed that extension of the act as an exclusive remedy is endorsed by the Attorneys General Association, but we do not anticipate that it's going to be passed in this session. So to preclude the possibility of a substantial claim against the state of Oregon, we would ask for this particular limitation or extension of liability. It's a very limited circumstance that it would apply, but it would only take one of these to cause some substantial problems for risk management. Now, we have coordinated the preparation of this proposed language with the Attorney General's office and with the Risk Management Division, and Risk Management Division is in favor of this. The Attorney General's office has, in essence, taken a neutral position, or a position that said it's basically, they're not in disagreement, I should put it that way, but that it's basically our responsibility because it pertains to more to the federal side of our operation than the state side. I attempt to answer any questions you may have on this subject.
Questions for Colonel Lockwood? Yeah, let me just ask, I guess, that the feds changed the law in 81, is that right?
Yes, I think it was December 29 of 81.
What was the change, basically?
Prior to that time, the Federal Tort Claims Act did not provide coverage for National Guard in Title 32 status. So it was a rather substantial extension of the Federal Tort Claims Act.
So in 81, the federal government said now the National Guards are included.
That's correct.
And prior to 81, were states required to provide that coverage?
Yes. Prior to 81, there was a ruling, I think a 1969 or 70 case, Maryland v. U.S., that there had been a determination that the Federal Tort Claims Act did not apply to National Guard because the National Guard, although in Title 32 status, they were still under the control of the respective governors, and therefore there was not sufficient federal interest to provide that coverage.
And, for example, in the 83 session, you folks believe that the federal tort coverage was the exclusive remedy, and that's why a change was not asked in 83?
That's correct. I think all of the states were under that illusion, if you will, and it wasn't until this case was filed in Washington. I think the accident occurred in the summer of 83, and the case was filed in 84, and it was set for trial about a month ago and was continued until, I believe, in September of this year. There was a requirement for additional discovery on the case.
Okay. Thank you, Colonel. Any more questions?
Colonel, I don't pretend to be an expert in the Federal Tort Claim Act, but the amendment you proposed, was this, did I understand you to say that the Attorney General's office assisted in the preparation of that language?
They reviewed the language and did not have any recommendations for a change on the language.
I'm just... I don't want to exaggerate an interpretation which may not exist, but maybe clarify its intent. As I read it, it would apply not just to the military department, but presumably any federal activity to which, or for which, presumably a remedy under these portions of the U.S. Code apply. I assume the Federal Tort Claim Act would be affected, or is this just for military activities?
We attempted to make it as broad as possible. Our intent is for the military type offense. I'm not aware of other areas that that there would be a similar exposure. But rather than the titles 5, 10, and 32 are the primary areas that relate to military activities. And we did, the suggestion was that or we include other federal laws. If there are amendments or other areas where there could be exposure, the same rationale should apply. In other words, it's not to eliminate a recovery, it's to limit a recovery to just one level, so that if the person were within the federal community, they'd still have that same limitation. An example is we don't have workman's compensation coverage per se for military. We have a system that is better. It's full pay and allowances for the individual in uniform that has a disabling injury, at least while they're still on active duty. So that's why we've used the word compensation program in here, because we can't use a workman's comp as a definition, and that's why we've attempted to cover the bases, if you will, in this language. But I do see it as the scope being extremely limited.
Okay, let me pose a hypothetical just so I understand it. What would happen if you had